Hello and welcome to part three of our immune system module. Here's where we're going to put it all together and come up with some suggestions for how you can support your clients in immune system balance and help them to create a healthy immune system and thus an overall healthy body system.
So before we begin, let's just make sure that you're aware that any of the information I'm presenting here is not intended to replace a one-on-one relationship with a qualified healthcare professional, and it's also not medical advice. And when you're presenting to your clients, you need to be really careful and make sure that they are aware that what you're presenting and what I'm presenting here today is intended as a sharing of my knowledge, information, clinical research, and clinical experience over many years. I encourage you, and you should encourage your clients, to make their own healthcare decisions based upon your research and in partnership with a qualified healthcare professional. This is especially true for folks who are on any medications. Just want to make sure that the things that we talk about in terms of nutrition are not going to interfere with the protocols.
So step one, in any kind of process where you're wanting to create balance and to restore health to a person, is to reduce their toxic load, is to work on the diet and lifestyle things that are predisposing. If they're not exercising, get them to exercise. If they're exercising and they're exercising too much, then have them get it to a more moderate level, because over-exercising can trigger immune system problems as well. Reduce the stress. It's huge, right? The society is constantly running away. Reduce the stress and balance the adrenals. So look at what's going on with their adrenals, because those, the cortisol effects on the system, on the immune system, are huge, huge. Balancing the blood sugar. People overlook this. How important balancing your blood sugar is to getting your thyroid balanced. You can't get your thyroid balanced if your blood sugars are out of whack. It's just not going to happen. Same thing with immune system. If your blood sugars are all over the place, you're creating inflammatory cytokines and all sorts of other mediators of inflammation, and it's going to affect the immune system. Reducing the antigenic load. Looking at people, I can't tell you how many people come in and I start asking them about their diet. They go, oh yeah, I have an allergy to milk. And then I look at their diet diary, and they have milk almost every day, or cheese, or in ways that maybe they don't even understand that it really is milk, right? I talked to somebody who was an MD. I mean, she should know that if she's allergic to milk, that cheese has milk in it and dairy in it. So when I went through some of the stuff with her, she was like, oh, she was blown away. She says, "Well, I'm gonna do this." She was thrilled, but she hadn't thought about it before. So don't be afraid to state the obvious to people, because they may not know. Yeah, I have a problem with dairy products, so I stay away from them. And then you look at their thing, well, oh yeah, but I just have a little bit of cheese every now and then. Or I just put a little bit of cream in my coffee. So really important to do a good history and reduce the antigenic load. Of course, reduce environmental exposures to toxins. We'll talk a lot more about that, the dietary and environmental exposures to toxins. Get them eating whole, fresh, antioxidant and nutrient-dense foods. Right? You need antioxidants to have a good immune system. Especially need it to keep the regulation going on so that you don't overkill and get your own tissue. So the fresh foods, and then of course repairing leaky gut and eliminate infections. Before you start doing all kinds of fancy stuff, make sure you get the basics in order. Before you start ordering hundreds or even thousands of dollars worth of fancy immune tests, get the basics in order. I will tell you, I have not had to run any of those fancy immune tests. I have not done it, and I've had really good results because I address the basics first. If somebody has a long-standing dominance, so you look at the list we'll get to in a little bit of the TH1 nutrients and herbs and the TH2s, and you basically look and see, well, if every time they try to do echinacea, they get flared up, or every time they do licorice, they get flared up, it's probably more of a long-standing effect. There's a paper, it's like 38 pages long, all about the TH1 and TH2. It's a Thorne Research, their Alternative Medicine Review, Volume 8, Number 3, 2003. It's a huge treatment on TH1 and TH2, the hypothesis limitations and implications. So some people are moving away from the TH1, TH2 model. And it's not the be-all and the end-all, but it's a tool. So if it's very equivocal, it could be that it is. Yes, it's switching, like I said earlier, right? They said there's certain things that will trigger one and the other, and if people have those superimposed on each other, it's an issue. So there's more and more movement away from that as important. Karazian talks about it all the time. You know, that's a real big, big, big thing. And I use it, the way I do it is I have people look at the lists and I say, have you ever, oh, I can't do licorice. Every time I do licorice, my symptoms flare up. You know, oh, I can't do echinacea. Or every time I do, whenever I do caffeine, I know it's not good for me, but every time I do caffeine, I feel great. Okay, we see that TH2 gets stimulated by that. So if somebody has a TH1 dominance, it's going to dampen it. You know, you guys know this stuff. I just want to reiterate it. I want you to reiterate it with your people. These are the things that slow down or damage the immune system. We talked about trans fats, how that works. Sugar paralyzes the macrophages. And it does that for anywhere from, you know, 2 hours to 8 hours, depending on the dose of sugar. And it does it from anywhere from 50% to 90%, depending on the dose and the person. So like my son said when he was 3, Daddy, you need more macrophages. Don't eat that. He knew. He knew at 3. Trans and heated fats, we know what they do. They cause oxidative stress. They cause free radical damage. They cause more work for the immune system. And they also damage the cells of the immune system. MSG, pesticides, preservatives, infections, allergens, artificial flavorings and colorings, processed grains, acid-forming foods, inflammatory foods, even cortisol, your own cortisol, and low thyroid function all have an effect on the immune system. Cortisol is an immunosuppressant. Thyroid, low thyroid function, everything including your immune cells are going to be running more sluggishly. So again, this is all part of step one, right? This is all part of the obvious stuff that we all know, but we need to be reminded of and reminding our patients of, because they are not necessarily doing this. Yeah, you know, I just figured it was okay to have a beer and some pizza. It's my birthday, you know, and meanwhile they've got a raging autoimmune disease. They don't realize how long it can take for that flare-up to come back down if they're sensitive to gluten. And I've seen that happen. So then there's our immune system assessment. Again, I'm just going to really quickly review this. We've gone over it before. The symptoms, the questionnaires, the interviews. It's really important to have an understanding of what's going on with people. You only do the specialized stuff because it's expensive. When you're not getting the results and you want to see what's going on there, that's when you're going to really be digging into this biochemistry and looking for papers on the various components that you find out of balance, and seeing what you can do differently for these folks, right? Food sensitivities and gluten testing. This is super important, it really is super important, because I don't think people can get their immune system back if they're eating foods that they're sensitive to. They're just constantly putting in salt on it. Fatty acid testing, can't stress it enough. That's one of the tests I do a lot of, because I really want to get them in balance with their fats, and I don't want to throw them too much into an extreme either. And I find that when you actually supplement with fatty acids, you can make changes really, really quickly. And I don't want to risk throwing them into a risk where they are thinning their blood too much and are at risk of hemorrhagic stroke. So I think it's important to do fatty acid testing. And with the blood spots, it's really easy. So let's look at balancing the immune system, step two. The T regulatory cell support, the immune barrier, really important with your vitamin D. Emulsified is best, or actually micellized if you can find it is even better. But 90% of autoimmune patients have been shown to have a genetic defect in vitamin D metabolism. You know, these numbers they come up with, of course they haven't tested 100% of people with the autoimmune and etc., but they're finding that there's a very high percentage of folks that have autoimmune disease that also have a genetic defect in the vitamin D metabolism. So it's huge. Very important. And when you do, you have to just be getting in way more than you normally would. Fatty acids, you want to optimize your omega-3. You don't want to push them too far into omega-3 dominance. You want to get that balance, you know, that 1:1 to 3:1 ratio between omega-6 and 3. It's really critical to have antioxidant support. So many people are just, they're eating bad foods. They're exposed to all sorts of environmental toxins. They're oxidizing like crazy, and they don't have any support for that. So things that help to support glutathione, either you could do a topical, a patch of glutathione, glutathione creams, You can do oral precursors to glutathione. So NAC and the various amino acids, there's a couple of products that actually do that. Protandim is one that professes to have a glutathione increase of 300% after the first month. Superoxide dismutase and catalase, those are all included in a product from Apex called OxyCell. You put it topically on. They recommend, and Dr. Karazian recommends, putting it right on the thyroid itself if you've got an autoimmune or over an area of inflammation to help it get into that area. It's got glutathione, SOD, catalase, and some other things. So it's really important that you get that going, and I've got a list of some of those things listed there. Really important to go through this with people. Very, very important. And then the whole thing about balancing helper, T helper 1s and T helper 2s, if you find that they have a dominance, you always want to stimulate the non-dominant one. If helper 1 is overactive, take the herbs that are recommended for T2 to support. If TH2 is overactive, take the herbs recommended for TH1. And then there's stuff that helps just bring balance, things like that are general nutritional stuff like probiotics and turmeric and things like that. So TH1 support, this is not exhaustive, but this has been found in studies, and in Karazian's book he has a list of the various studies that these are related to. If the person says, I feel great when I drink caffeine, I know it's not good for me, but I feel great, then see what other kinds of things you can put them on. Resveratrol, pycnogenol, white willow bark, pine bark, grapeseed. If somebody says, every time I eat mushrooms or take licorice or something, I just get flared up, I just don't feel well, then maybe they have a TH1 dominance and you're pushing them more towards that TH1 dominance. So again, get them towards that TH2. But if they say, oh, I love mushrooms and echinacea, and so I make an immune drink and it's so great for me, they probably have a TH1 support problem. Most of the people you see, however, are not going to be that sophisticated to be already on these things, and you're going to be introducing them. So the nutrients that protect, we looked at zinc. Zinc is really critical. We looked at the mechanisms. Selenium helps as well. It's an antioxidant, and it's very important for the liver and for detoxification and for anti-cancer. Vitamin C, we talked about how that does. Vitamin A protects. Generally, vitamin A tends to be really effective when you have viral stuff going on to support virals. Early on, I discovered through research, I don't even remember the source at this point, that 3 days of vitamin A at 100,000 IUs a day would give you the support to knock out hepatitis or another kind of strong viral infection really quickly. And I remember, this is another good story, back early on in practice, and I had recommended that to somebody, and she got the liquid vitamin A, and each drop contained 5,000 IUs. So I said to her, take 20 drops. That sounds reasonable, 20 drops. And she calls me up like 2 days later. She goes, that bottle is empty already. I'm like, what do you mean it's empty already? She says, well, you said to take 20 dropperfuls, and boy, that just, it's gone. I'm like, ah! That's vitamin A toxicity. 20 dropperfuls was quite a bit more than 20 drops. So we had her stop, and she didn't have any negative consequences, but she all was feeling really, really good. Her viral infection was clear. I really would use those kinds of high doses, not just somebody who's dealing with the common cold, although a little bit of extra vitamin A could be helpful, but I would reserve that for those severe cases when somebody has a really resistant or chronic cough or bronchitis or something that doesn't seem to be going away, or more likely to be something like hepatitis or mono, but you do need to be careful. Vitamin C has been found in IV to be very, very effective at knocking out infections very quickly. Manganese, copper, and sulfur are all important, and the sulfur-containing amino acids are really important for the immune system and support. Vitamin D, ad infinitum already, D is super important. And again, Mercola had published at one point when the whole thing about swine flu, he says the way to deal with swine flu, if you get swine flu or feel like you're about to get it, is vitamin D, and he had recommended, it was a relationship to your weight. It was probably like 90% of your weight as IUs in vitamin D. So I said 100,000 IUs is good enough. So I took, okay, I'll try it. I've tried taking 100,000 IUs of vitamin D for a few days just to see. I recommended that to one of my clients, and it knocked her cold out. Like, she had been dealing with it for several weeks, and it knocked it out in 3 days. She took 100,000 IUs of vitamin D for 3 days. You don't want to do it long term. These are fat-soluble vitamins. They get stored in the liver. They can cause toxicity. But in short term, when they're well monitored, it can often be a really, really effective therapeutic for supporting the immune system. So those are things that I would recommend. The sulfur-containing amino acids, things like methionine and taurine and cysteine, are really important to provide those sulfur groups, not only for the immune system, but detoxification. Foods that enhance the general stuff, of course, organic, fresh, you know, nutrient-dense vegetables, greens, high-end greens, cooked if the person has digestive stuff, raw if they don't, as long as they're chewing them well, land and sea greens to provide all those trace minerals that our land ones don't, algae. Mushrooms are amazing for immune support. The shiitakes that you can buy at the store are just from a food standpoint. You can also go with maitake and reishi, and you can get those usually in supplement form as powders or extracts or things like that. Good old garlic and onion as well. They provide quercetin and they provide allicin, which is a very good antimicrobial, so helps to support the immune function. Bell peppers, they have a lot of A and C in them as well. Ginger's a super, super duper anti-inflammatory, and turmeric is good for everything. The turmeric, you know, and you do have to be careful of people in terms of making them, if they're too hot, a constitution, they may not be able to take too much ginger or turmeric. But really, turmeric has been found to study. Cayenne or capsaicin in the cayenne is really, really helpful when you're dealing with immune stuff, as is something like horseradish, which stimulates the movement of mucus. These are foods. So when you start to get people, if they don't already have serious immune problems, and you just start to get them to include these foods on a regular basis, including them in smoothies and soups and stews and elixirs, you're going to have a good deal. You're going to have to be a little bit more targeted when these people already have autoimmune diseases. And again, mushrooms stimulate Th1. So if they say, no, I can't do mushrooms, I get worse, then you want to avoid that with them. So it's really a matter of working with people through their preferences, through how they respond to the foods, through their food allergies. And that's going to help you a lot to determine what they should be eating, drinking, and taking. When you're working with people around herbs, it's a preference for them. What are they going to be doing? The form to use is the one that they're actually going to do. And maybe a tincture of this herb or a pill of that herb is going to do better than a different form. But if they're not willing to take it, then you're not going to do any good. So a tea, for example, my son I sent to an acupuncturist, herbalist. Now, if that acupuncturist had given him a bag of tea with all the herbs in it, that boy would not have done it. First of all, it would have been really a pain to do that in a dorm room. And secondly, even if he was home, he probably wouldn't have done it because it tastes gross. It's a lot of work. He gave him one in a pill form and one in a powder form. And he said, mix it with warm water and drink it. That my son could do. I bought him some tea bags. You know, I bought him some licorice and ginger tea bags because he was like really cold too. It was really odd what was going on with him. So I was trying to warm him up. So he was willing to do that because he could borrow somebody's little tea kettle and he could make tea, or he could go to the cafeteria and get hot water. But he wouldn't have done the whole Chinese herbal formulation, even if that was the best way. So work with people. I always ask, well, what do you prefer? Do you like to take tinctures, or do you prefer to take liquids, or do you prefer powders? Do you prefer to mix your herbs into your drinks or your smoothies or whatever, and work with them where they're at? Yeah, you might have to up the dose a little bit if a particular herb is not going to be done to work as well in that form, but what they're going to take is what's going to be. And so if they don't have a preference, then you'll pick which ones you think are going to work best for that particular, whatever you're working with them on. I have somebody who just loves tincture. She's sensitive to everything when she takes it in a capsule form. But she loves the tinctures and she gets great results, and she can even take a couple of droppers full of the tinctures and she responds immediately. It's wonderful. I have other people who just love to drink tea and they love making teas and they love doing it that way. Others that love to make elixirs, you know, mixing in some nut milk with a bunch of different herbs and putting that together and drinking it, and they get great results. So it's all a matter of what's going on. Steams and topicals, like steams are really good when people have respiratory stuff. So you can put, you know, eucalyptus and other sorts of things that are really good for moving mucus into the steams, or you can have them do a hot shower and have essential oils in an infusion. Topical works well for some people. It's like, I don't want to put that on my skin. I don't want to take progesterone topically. I don't want to take OxyCell. Can I take something, just take a pill? Don't you have a pill for that? So it just depends on who you're working with. So the top supporting immune herbs. And again, you know, a lot of people will say, oh, you can't give somebody who has an autoimmune disease echinacea because they've read that echinacea will make it worse, like somebody with lupus or whatever. It may indeed make somebody who has a Th1 dominant autoimmune condition worse. But for the most part, echinacea will help to reduce inflammation, it helps to destroy free radicals, increases the active white blood cells, and stimulates production of interferon. If I feel like I'm getting a cold, I just grab a bottle of echinacea. I actually have some echinacea throat spray. I have it liquid. I can feel a little bit of scratchiness in my throat. I gargle with the echinacea. I just actually literally take that echinacea, put it in, and gargle with it. It doesn't taste good. You might not be able to get people to do it, but it's really, really effective. Ginseng. The ginosides are anti-inflammatory, anti-diabetic, and anti-cancer. So what's wrong with that? Well, some people can't take ginseng. Some people, it's overstimulating. You have to work with people. And if you're new to herbs, you just work small amounts and you use the more common ones. And I'm just giving you the more common ones and usually the safer ones. Ganoderma is reishi mushroom, chaga mushroom. They're both really super immune tonics. And again, some people are sensitive to mushrooms. You can't give them mushrooms. But these are just super powerful immune support, long-term and for, I usually use those more for the long-term as opposed to acute, but I've been making little elixirs and smoothies with those in them as well. Astragalus, I use that more, and that's the way I was taught on astragalus, that you don't want to use it during the acute phases of an illness, that you want to use it in between. And that was David Winston's experience with it. David Winston is the herbalist that I studied with for 2 years. And then cat's claw. That cat's claw has axindole, which enhances the capacity to engulf and destroy pathogens. So that phagocytosis, those antigen-presenting cells, cat's claw will help that. As you explore other herbs and you look into them and you really read the details, I encourage you, but read the story about these herbs. It's great for you, for your own health, but understanding it is going to help you to better work with people and have certain herbs just jump out at you when you understand all their properties to say, oh, I think that herb will be great for that person. And a lot of times it's trial and error. I mean, unless you have 17 or 20 years or whatever of herbal medicine and acupuncture under your belt, then it's more than just, you know, whatever comes through trial and error. So other immune-boosting herbs, elderberry, that it's very good for viral stuff. It improves the antibodies. Andrographis, sometimes called Indian echinacea, helps to stimulate the immune function and halts the viral growth. Baptisia stimulates the immune system. I was listening to an herbal course Paul Bergner had brought on a guest speaker, and he was really amazing, and he said, you know, I've only got 3 hours to talk about antiviral herbs. So he talked about antiviral. He goes, they're not really antiviral. They're mostly antiviral. They're really stimulating your immune system. They all have different properties, and it was really, really excellent. And again, he just did 3 hours, and he thought that wasn't enough to really go into them. You can really go into this in depth. But if I give you some starting points and give you some of the ideas of how they work, then you can go deeper, and you can just get started using these. Usnea, what David Winston always described, is those are for really yucky sinus infections, and when it's like thick and green and putrid and smelly, Usnea is a great one for that. Licorice boosts interferon, which is an antiviral chemical. I mean, but licorice you have to be careful about in people who have elevated cortisol, because licorice helps you to not break down the cortisol and to utilize it more fully. So it's great for people with low adrenals, but it can be overstimulating for a lot of people, and you have to be careful you stay away from it in people who have hypertension or a tendency towards hypertension, or at least monitor them if they do take small amounts of it. What it does is it helps you to recycle your cortisol. So if somebody has high levels of cortisol, they're in like a stage 1 adrenal fatigue, you don't give them licorice. You stay away from licorice there. It can be very stimulating to them, but it also can induce hypertension, I found it out. I just played an experiment on my body with licorice and did 3 dropperfuls 3 times a day, plus drank licorice tea. I did that for about 3 or 4 weeks, and I jumped my blood pressure up from, generally speaking, around 100 to 110 over 60 to 70, up to 135 over 95. So it definitely does stimulate hypertension, I found out, even in people who have low blood sugar to start. It's excellent for people who have low blood sugar. You know, people who are really adrenal fatigued, and they stand up and the whole world goes down. That was what's happening to my son. I said, honey, I think you've created an adrenal burnout with all the studying and the late nights and not getting the good food here. And he said, yeah, every time I stand up, he said, Mom, I'm photophobic, which is the word for you're very sensitive to the light. But because my boy has been growing up with Mom, he calls it what it is, photophobic. I'm photophobic, and when I stand up, what's going on with that? I said, well, I think your adrenals are burned out. So I sent him an adrenal tonic, which had very little licorice in it because I didn't want to risk him taking too much. I had one person who I told to do licorice, and she really needed the licorice. She had really low cortisol first thing in the morning, and she had some other stuff going on, and she said, I told her to take 3 drops. And she took 3 drops, and it overstimulated her. So she's been taking 1 drop. It's huge for her. 1 drop, sometimes 2, first thing in the morning and at lunchtime, and it helps her to get through her work day dramatically. And we've seen a really big shift in her adrenal stress index. Someone who has, like, their cortisol first thing in the morning is flat. It's flat. And then they have this really high peak at 4 in the afternoon. You wouldn't want them to take licorice anywhere near their peak, but you could definitely give it to them first thing in the morning, and that could be very, very helpful at regulating and neutralizing them. Again, watching out for the blood pressure. Whenever I put somebody on it, I'll tell them, now, monitor your blood pressure. Either go get one of those home blood pressure cuffs so that you can keep track of it, and just every once a week, just monitor it, or go periodically into Walgreens or whatever the local pharmacy is and pay $1 to get your blood pressure taken in the machine. Is there a timing prep? Maitake is another one. Wonderful for stimulating T cells, NK cells, and macrophages. So they're helping you in all the aspects of your immune system. So maitake would be something you could take as a acute type of a formula. You can get that as a food herb. You can get it as an extract. But maitake comes in powder. You can get at Mountain Rose Herbs. You can also get the little dried maitake mushrooms, and you can soak them, and you can make mushroom gravies, or you can put them into stir fries and things like that. Sinus infections is usnea. It's good for those really putrid, disgusting, chronic sinus things that just won't go away. And then gynostemma, which increases the number and activity of your white blood cells. So I've been drinking my gynostemma tea. I'm out of licorice tea. I've been putting in some mushroom powders and really supporting the immune system. And so coming up with some fun recipes. I've given you some starting points. A polished herbalist would be probably cringing at me at looking at that, but I just use some of the general herbs that give you general support in creating a formula for somebody. You know, a truly nourishing, balanced herbal formula takes a little bit of practice to do, but it can be really life-changing for people to have these herbs. I have somebody who She's taking tinctures because that's the easiest for her, but now she's concerned that it's too much alcohol. She's going to try to switch, but she just thriving on these tinctures, and mostly adrenals, but some adaptogens, some immune system support, etc. And she's just really thriving on it. So I've just kind of looked at with your immune system, like looking at the action being immunostimulators versus immunomodulators. So modulators being keeping them nice and steady. Like an adaptogen is for the adrenals. It doesn't make it too high. It doesn't make it low. It just does what you need. It modulates. In the stimulator column are garlic, wild indigo, baptisia. Baptisia is another really good one for sinus kind of stuff, for dripping and things. There's myrrh and echinacea, boneset, elderberry. Elderberry, again, really good for the viral things. And spilanthes and usnea. And we've described them, and again, I just encourage you to take this to the next step, because we could spend, I spent 2 years studying the herbs, so you can spend a lot of times on them. What I would recommend, this is a really good thing for everybody to try, is just pick an herb a week. Pick an herb a week that you really want to get to know, and get to know it. Read about it, study it, buy some, smell it, take the tincture, play with it, get to know it. If you do that at the end of a year, you've got 52 herbs that you've got mastered. I learned 400 herbs. Do I know those 400 herbs? No. If you ask most herbalists, how many herbs do you really use a lot on a regular basis? It's probably 50 or less. So if you just start to go through and pick an herb a week, and I'd even encourage you more further than that, pick an herb, learn it, study it, and then write a blog post. Post it to your own blog, and you can also submit it to me as a guest blog submission, and I'll get it posted for you. So encourage you to do that. If all of you do that, we can create an amazing, wonderful compendium of articles that we could share with each other. So pick an herb a week and go for it. Immune system essential oils, you've heard of these before. You can put them in diffusers. You can put drops of them in your water. You can mix them with oils like coconut oil or olive oil, and you put them in salads. There's a lot of ways to take essential oils. I put mine in my water. I have to keep shaking it up and drinking it that way. Oregano, phenomenal. It's good for antimicrobial, antiviral. Thyme and basil are also antiviral. Lemon has limonene, and bitter orange, they have limonene and limonene. Cinnamon, frankincense, peppermint, eucalyptus. Frankincense for when people have illnesses. These are the ones that work for cold and flu, the oregano, lemon, cinnamon, frankincense, peppermint, and eucalyptus. I just gave you a little bit of extra info on oregano because it's so important. You can treat everything from common colds to warts, but it's considered a hot oil. So it should be used cautiously, both in terms of not getting it on your skin or lips, but also in terms of somebody who has a hot constitution and is already sweating a lot. You may want to be careful about giving that to them. But dilute it if you're going to apply it to your face or throat. And if you're doing it in your water, make sure you stir it real well, because it tends to sit at the top and can burn your mouth and tongue. Better would be to mix it in with a little bit of oil, like a little bit of olive oil or some coconut oil, and do it on a salad dressing, or just even, you know, pour it on something and take it that way. If you do get a splatter on your face, don't dilute it with water. It's not going to work. Dilute it with butter or oil. Just take some, you know, coconut butter and put, or cacao butter or something like that, and put it on there. Oregano, if you're going to apply it topically, the back of the shoulders and the bottoms of the feet seems to be the most effective from a historical perspective. A few drops in water, you can gargle and drink it. I have done that, and it's really amazing, but not a few drops. It depends on how much water. If you put a few drops in water, it's going to be really challenging to take unless it's 32 ounces of water. If it's just an 8-ounce glass of water, one drop is going to be plenty. And definitely making soup. I love to steam up vegetables and then take all those veggies and put them in the blender, blend it up and add seasonings. Just a couple of drops of oregano oil in there, and then you put the garlic, fresh garlic. You've got an immune soup that's just going to really, really stimulate your immune system phenomenally. You've probably heard a lot about resveratrol. There's a lot of pros and cons, and definitely it's all good stuff, but the problem is, how much do you have to take? They say crazy things like, oh, it's going to help you to be able to achieve the fitness of a trained athlete, stay thin and prevent diabetes and heart disease and live to be 120 years old, all while eating a high-calorie, high-fat diet. So it's kind of like, I don't know about that. But the thing is, in the studies, they did a lot of rat studies, and they achieved these miracle results. But it was the equivalent of between 750 and 1,500 bottles of red wine a day. Not ounces, bottles of wine a day. Or taking 360 capsules. Resveratrol is not cheap. 360 capsules is 4 bottles. You take 4 bottles of this resveratrol a day, and you are tapping into your retirement account big time. So it can improve blood sugar and insulin balance. It can promote the growth of new mitochondria. It can interrupt metabolic pathways responsible for aging, and that has to do with telomeres. So it's, again, something to look into, but remember that the dramatic changes were found with huge quantities, so just taking resveratrol or just drinking wine is not going to cut it. You know, you'd certainly kill yourself with that much wine. I like to be repetitive about this stuff because I know that you need to hear it. Your patients need to hear it. I know that some of you are like, yeah, I know I shouldn't eat sugar, but I do still sometimes, and I should avoid gluten, and I do still sometimes. It's hugely important for your immune system. Your immune system is important to keep you safe, happy, healthy, whole, and free of those long-term horrible conditions that come when you don't have a healthy immune system, like autoimmune disease, like which can be debilitating, especially something like MS can be completely debilitating. Okay, and then also things like cancer. So you customize the diet, supplement, herbs to the individual based on their genetics environment. So you create the owner's manual for them. You use only fuel designed for your machine, this body, your machine. Like your car, you tune it up regularly. Getting an oil change. People laugh when I say, we're going to do an oil change. You do an oil change on your car? Yes. Well, why don't we do an oil change on your body? You've got all those old oils stuck in your cell membranes. Let's transfer them out. And you get them off of all those trans fats and all those things. You have them on no oil for a while. If you can get them on a no oil, like on my green cleanse for a week of no oil at all, and then you introduce the oils back in, their body's going to suck up the good oils, and then it's only the good oils with the right ratio of omega-6 to 3. Too much omega-6, you know, people are just going crazy on almond butter and all that, and it's really high in omega-6. So you want to be going to the nuts that have very little of either omega-6 or 3, like cashew or macadamia, and coconut. And coconut actually enhances the uptake and the conversion of omega-3. So you do go with your seeds, your omega-3 rich seeds like hemp and flax and chia, although there's some controversy of flax that was represented, which you still have to look into. So give it plenty of rest, park it in the garage overnight for a long time, keep it moving and have fun with it. Prescription. You can put this on your own prescription pad and get your people to follow through, and this is going to be their prescription. And you're going to need to help them get there, because just giving that to most people is going to be, it's overwhelming. So it's you working with them step by step, figuring out what the most important things to address first are, moving through it, and being there to support them. You need to be able to make ATP. Your mitochondria are a huge source of free radicals. So you need to be supporting them in a ways that nutrient-rich, nutrient-dense, vitamin B2, B3, magnesium, carnitine, helps to get the fats in there. Those are really super important for your mitochondria. Ribose, it's another thing, it's a sugar that's utilized by the mitochondria. It's easy to get in, it doesn't require insulin to get into the cell. CoQ10 can be important because it's part of that whole Krebs cycle. And if you don't remember Krebs cycle, go back to the very first module we did was on cellular metabolism. So these are some papers that I have on the website. These are things that you can use with your clients. You can make your own version of it. You can use my version of it. Either way is fine. And use these with your clients. The vitamin C calibration, the zinc taste, the list of zinc-containing foods, EFA information sheet, an optimizing fat handout, oxidative test, oxidative stress quiz. You've got that in here, but there's also a separate page for it. The acid, alkaline food charts, boosting your immunity naturally paper, and inflammation flow charts. These are all tools that you can do when you sit down knee to knee with somebody or over the phone with somebody, and you can pass these things on, get them started when you're creating a plan.